Hi, and this is Ike Evans of the Hawk Foundation, coming to you from the Texas Network of Youth Services annual conference here in Austin. This is a special episode of Into the Fold, our podcast, and I'm here with Dr. Mark Fagan, and he just delivered his keynote address, and hopefully you know, he'll give us the benefit of his very big brain on the subject of, the theme for the conference is creating a culture of care. But hopefully he'll have quite a bit to say about that and anything else that happens to be on his mind at the moment. So, Dr. Fagan, thanks so much for being with us.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll see if my voice is still intact.
Yeah, well, same here. So anyway, addressing the theme for the conference, creating a culture of care, I was just wondering if in your keynote, if that was something that you had the opportunity to touch on, and what thoughts on the subject that you might have to share.
Sure. And, you know, I think the theme is a fantastic one. You know, my angle is really talking about services and supports for emerging adults, you know, kind of the age range of young people that are sort of getting beyond their adolescent years and are now sort of working into their young adulthood. And so thinking about how supports and care can be different and should be considered different sometimes for that emerging adult group is really, really important and sometimes gets overlooked. What we know about emerging adults is that, you know, they're usually kind of in a situation where their services and supports that they can get end up being both from a child serving sector and an adult serving sector, and their sort of in-betweenness really gets exacerbated during that young adult time. They're sort of legally an adult, but a lot of times they aren't reaching a lot of the adult markers. I mean, a lot of us don't reach those adult markers of having a steady career and moving into our own place and all those sorts of things until we're even 26. Yet a lot of the young people that we know that are really struggling with services and supports are moving in, are needing to meet some of those adult markers for survival at 18, 19, 20. So I think a lot of what we're talking about is how can we think about care and supports differently for that emerging adulthood group?
Okay, so you mentioned the in-betweenness of the population that you're talking about. I was wondering if you might have a concrete example or two about, what can go wrong if that in-between status is not taken into account? And then second, how mindfulness of that in-between status, can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And, you know, in the first area, you know, I really kind of look at the young people that have, you know, sort of been in, you know, systems like a child welfare system or a juvenile justice system as a young kid. And now they're getting into their older adolescence, which we would consider emerging adulthood or transition age years. And in that time, while they've been through the different systems, oftentimes they have they have severed relationships with family members. You know, they have difficulty maintaining a lot of the supports ongoing. They have moved from placement to placement. Now, all of a sudden, they're getting to be 17, 18, 19 years old, and they're in a position where they no longer are part of that child-serving arena, and they also are struggling to really engage with the adult-serving arena, which is really geared toward 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, stuff like that. And at the same time, they don't have that same kind of family connection that a lot of typically developing young adults have had in their lives. And so they go through a period where they any kind of small mess up, let's say they are, you know, moving into their own place for the first time and they no longer have money for rent, or, you know, they're struggling in school and they need extra supports. For a lot of typically developing young adults, those things happen. But they'll have some other kind of resources to rely upon. A lot of the young people that we know that are leaving kind of a child welfare arena or any of those service sectors don't necessarily have those same level of services and supports or family connections to be able to kind of support them from what we would call sort of falling off that transition cliff. And so thinking about how to help prepare some of those emerging adults differently and engage them differently in supports than they would have gotten on a child side or an adult side is really crucially important for those years so that they can build a lasting emerging adulthood moving into those adult markers.
Okay. Could you expound a little bit on your own personal and professional background and say a little bit about how it is that, you know, you came to be so engaged on, you know, the subject of transition age youth, issues of emerging adulthood?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, you know, for me, I sort of started off a long time ago involved in journalism, and I thought that I was going to do kind of things in broadcasting and radio. And I started realizing that I didn't have a voice or a face for those kinds of things. And I needed to kind of take a step and look in a different direction. I decided, you know, I really enjoy kind of getting into the mind and the thoughts behind people. So I went into an area of psychology. And so I'm a psychologist by trade. And, you know, I'm reading your mind right now, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. and
good luck with that.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, as I was kind of moving through that, I thought that I was going to do therapy for young people, and I was going to kind of do that. But as I sort of started to move on, I realized that I'm not a very good therapist, and I'm not very good at kind of sitting down in a one-on-one behind a desk and all those other sorts of things. And I wanted to think about therapy in different ways. And so I started to take a look at programs and how to really kind of develop programs and overall supports that are outside of the therapy office or outside of offices in general, and really kind of think about how to provide services and supports for young people in that way. So, you know, now I'm in a position where I do two different things. One of my main focus is that I work at an organization called Thresholds in Chicago. And so I'm the vice president of clinical operations and the youth services there, where we have a lot of housing-based supports, residential transitional living programs, as well as transition supports in the community for specifically for young adults with more serious levels of mental illness. And then I also am a trainer and consultant for the National Network on Youth Transition. And so we provide training and support specifically on young adults through a model that we call the TIP model. And it's a transition to independence process, which we talked a little bit about today at the conference.
Didn't mean to speak over you, but I was saying just lots of luck with trying to read my mind and bring a bookmark.
Yep.
Transition to independence. I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about that, because it's a term that I frequently hear bandied about.
And transition to independence is sort of an archaic way to think about it. You know, even though we say that and that's in the vernacular, we're really thinking about transition to interdependence. And so the difference there, of course, is that we want young people to be able to become more self-sufficient and take ownership over their transition years into adulthood. And so it is to some extent about having independent way of thinking and an independent way of operating outside of a system. But at the same time, you can't really have independence without interdependence. And so a lot of what we train on is how to build a community of support with a young person and how to help a young person think about who they can rely upon in their lives, how they can build relationships that are going to last over time, and how emerging adults can start to think about how they relate to people in their community. And that may be a landlord, that may be, you know, an employer, or it may be somebody in their family, or, you know, a romantic relationship. All those things play a big part in sort of that transition into adult-based markers.
Taking into account, you know, the sheer level of your expertise and the length of your involvement with these issues, are there still things that catch you off guard or catch you by surprise in working with emerging adults? Because I, just based on my own vague recollections of what it was like to be one, it's a pretty fraught period in a person's life.
It's a good question. You know, there's very little that I've seen from the emerging adults that surprises me. You know, I've seen a lot of successes, and that doesn't surprise me at all. And then we also see a lot of young people that are really struggling, and that, of course, does not surprise me either. what I think is really moving for me is when we have young adults that may have struggled for a long period of time, and then maybe we lose contact with them, or they sort of graduate on other services or supports and we lose contact, and they may come back, you know, a year later, a couple years later, and tell us a little bit about, you know, something that they remember learning years and years and years ago, and now only now is it kind of making sense to them, or they're saying, man, I really connected well with my caseworker or something like that. And I think those are the things that really strike me, you know, when young people kind of remember some of those things that didn't make sense to them at, when they were 19, but maybe now at 23, it is making sense to them and it's impacted their lives in some way. I think when it comes to what surprises me, what does surprise me a little bit right now still is when is on a systems level, when we still have systems that are so sort of continuing to be siloed, when all of the research and all the day-to-day experiences of young people are sort of glaring, in that we need to do a better job connecting those pieces together. Yet state systems have not found those real easy and, you know, that easy ways that don't cost any money to be able to connect those systems together, even on small enough levels that can make big impacts.
Okay, so looking to the future, hackneyed phrase of the, if we can call it, the transition age youth movement. Are there any exciting developments or you know, future milestones that you're anticipating?
Yeah, there are a number of things that are going on. You know, kind of some of the things that we were talking about earlier are really about having the thoughts that young people are the sort of owners of their own trajectory. And so instead of adults kind of managing all the care for young people, kind of having young people really be involved more and more in the ownership and their say and their kind of movement in and out of those services, and for adults to be flexible about some of those moves and really kind of get an understanding of what young people want from their own voice. And that's really a big part of what we're seeing on a day-to-day basis. So it's about being flexible. It's about, you know, talking to young people and getting an understanding of what they need, and also helping support them when things aren't going so well, yet knowing that they're going to be learning something about that as they kind of move on. On a more systems level, there's a couple of things, one of which is some of the changes in the Affordable Care Act. And so as a result, some states are able to take advantage of expanded Medicare or Medicaid, which then allows young people to further engage in services in ways that maybe they never were able to before. Because what we know is that emerging adults represents a population with the highest levels of mental health needs, yet the least likely to engage in mental health services. So we now have an arena where they're more eligible. And so getting them to the door and making those services appealing is really important. The other thing that's going on a federal level, a number of states have applied for what's called the Healthy Transitions Initiative. And so that's going to allow states to be able to experiment, so to speak, with best practices on a state level and have a couple local providers kind of provide best practices of services for young adults, with the young adults playing a huge role in what those services and supports will look like. And so within the next couple months, we're going to find out what states are doing that. And over the course of about a year or two, we'll get an idea of what those best practices are, so that all states and all service areas can start to take advantage of that.
Okay, great. I think we've pretty much hit all the bases, unless there's anything else that's burning on your mind that you would like to speak to.
I don't think I have anything burning. I would just say that, you know, the more that we as adults can be authentic and genuine and spend time getting to know what each young person is interested in and what motivates them, and be flexible in spending our time and engaging with young people, the better trajectories our young people will have as they start to move forward in their emerging adulthood.
Okay, well, that's our interview. Dr. Fagan, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us, and we really do appreciate it and appreciate you here at the Hawk Foundation.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it too.